December 11th, 2010, would have been Grace Paley's 88th birthday. We will spend the next half hour celebrating her life, her words, and her actions, with her biographer and local writer Judith Arcana, and play excerpts from an episode of Circle A Radio, which aired on KABU on December 5th, 2007.
I'm Judith Arcana. I live here in Portland. I'm a local writer, as the phrase goes. And one of the things I have written is a book about Grace Paley, and that's how I met her. I met Grace in 1984 when I started to do the research on her life, which then became my book, Grace Paley's Life Stories. And I could write that book because she let me into her life. I was a total stranger. I had literally never seen her, never heard her voice. I had only read her work. And through various experiences, which would take far too long to discuss right now, I met her. I asked her. She thought about it for a long time. I thought for sure she was going to say no. But ultimately, she said, yes, I could do it. She not only let me into her life, she introduced me to her family, her friends. She said, talk to this woman, which, you know, is solid gold for someone writing biographical text. So we became friends, which was terrific. You know, we laughed a lot. We talked a lot. We thought a lot together. We ate food, everything from brownies to stew. Visited each other in our different states. And, you know, I cared for her. So there's the friendship part. Then there's this this feeling, this sensibility that I still carry in her absence, that she is so valuable. So while I hardly think of myself as, you know, the Grace Paley Brigade, there are thousands of people all over the globe who are, you know, members of that brigade, I do think of myself as someone who wants people to know about Grace and her work so that we can, as I noted, so that we can keep learning from her.
This is Grace Paley.
2 weeks before Christmas, Ellen called me and said, Faith, I'm dying. That week, I was dying too. After we talked, I felt worse. I left the kids alone and ran down to the corner for a quick sip among living creatures. But Julie's and all the other bars were full of men and women gulping a hot whiskey before hustling off to make love. People require strengthening before the acts of life. I drank a little California Mountain Red at home and thought, why not? Wherever you turn, someone is shouting, give me liberty or I give you death. Perfectly sensible, thing-owning, church-fearing neighbors flopped their hands over their ears at the sound of a siren to keep fallout from taking hold of their internal organs. You have to be cockeyed to love, and blind in order to look out the window at your own ice-cold street. I really was dying. I was bleeding. The doctor said you can't bleed forever. Either you run out of blood or you stop. No one bleeds forever. Seemed I was going to bleed forever. When Ellen called to say she was dying, I said this clear sentence, please, I'm dying too, Ellen. Then she said, Oh, Faithy, I didn't know. She said, Faith, what'll we do about the kids? Who'll take care of them? I'm too scared to think. I was frightened, too, but I only wanted the kids to stay out of the bathroom. I didn't worry about them. I worried about me. They were noisy. They came home from school too early. They made a racket. I may have another couple of months, Ellen said. The doctor said he never saw anyone with so little will to live. I don't want to live, he thinks. But, Faithy, I do. I do. It's just I'm scared. I could hardly take my mind off this blood. Its hurry to leave me was draining the red out from under my eyelids and sunburn off my cheeks. It was all rising from my cold toes to find the quickest way out. Life isn't that great, Ellen, I said. We've had nothing but crummy days and crummy guys and no money and broke all the time and cockroaches and nothing to do on Sunday but take the kids to Central Park and row on that lousy lake. What's so great, Ellen? What's the big loss? Live a couple more years, see the kids and the whole cruddy thing, every cheese hole in the world go up in heat, blast, fire waves. I want to see it all, Ellen said. I felt a great gob making its dizzy exit. "Can't talk," I said. "I think I'm fainting." Around the holly season, I began to dry up. My sister took the kids for a while so I could stay home quietly making hemoglobin, red corpuscles, etc. with no interruption. I was in such first-class shape by New Year's, I nearly got knocked up again. My little boys came home. They were tall and handsome. 3 weeks after Christmas, Ellen died. At her funeral, at that very neat church on the Bowery, her son took a minute out of crying to tell me, "Don't worry, Faith. My mother made sure of everything. She took care of me from her job. The man came and said so." "Oh, shall I adopt you anyway?" I asked, wondering if he said yes. Where the money, the room, another 10 minutes of good nights, where they would all come from. He was a little older than my kids. He would soon need a good encyclopedia, a chemistry set. "Listen, Billy, tell me the truth. Shall I adopt you?" He stopped all his tears. "Why, thanks. Oh, no. I have an uncle in Springfield. I'm going to him. I'll have it okay. It's in the country. I have cousins there." "Well," I said, relieved. "I just love you, Billy. You're the most wonderful boy. Ellen must be so proud of you." He stepped away and said, "She's not anything of anything, Faith." Then he went to Springfield. I don't think I'll see him again. But I often long to talk to Ellen, with whom, after all, I have done a million things in these scary private years. We drove the kids up every damn rock in Central Park. On Easter Sunday, we pasted white doves on blue posters and prayed on 8th Street for peace. Then we were tired and screamed at the kids. The boys were babies. For a joke, we stapled their snowsuits to our skirts, and in a rage of slavery, every Saturday for weeks, we marched across the bridges that connect Manhattan to the world. We shared apartments, jobs, and stuck-up studs. And then, 2 weeks before last Christmas, we were dying.
Judith Arcana wrote this piece to celebrate Grace Paley's birthday this year.
Grace Paley was a great writer, loved and respected all over the world. She was also an activist working on anti-militarism, the conditions of women's lives, and urgent environmental issues. Grace understood that sometimes cops or soldiers in the street are angry or scared enough to be cruel and violent. Yet she said, "I don't think the thing for me has been civil disobedience so much as the importance of not asking permission." She also said, "Nonviolence does not mean personal safety. Pacifism is not passivism." Grace Paley's work was writing and political action. She used both of these to seek truth and justice. Born in 1922, she died in 2007. We can celebrate her birthday, December 11th, by thinking about and acting on some of the things she wrote and said. Here are some of those things. "I have always believed that if there are prisons, they ought to be in the neighborhood, not where families have to take cars, buses, ferries, trains, and the population that considers itself innocent forgets, denies, chooses to never know that there is a whole huge country of the bad and the unlucky and the self-herders, a country with a population greater than that of many nations in our world." Another thing Grace said is, "To get birth control when I was young, you had to be older and married. You couldn't get anything in drugstores unless you were terribly sick and had to buy a diaphragm because your womb was falling out. I was 18, and it was 1940 when I tiptoed in to get a diaphragm. I said I was married. My generation, and only in our later years, and the one right after mine, have been the only ones to really enjoy any sexual freedom. The kids have to know that it's not just the right to abortion which is essential. It's their right to a sexual life." Here's another thing Grace said. I got a couple more. Here's one of those. Lots of literature comes from not knowing. It comes from what you're curious about. It comes from what obsesses you. It comes from what you want to know. You write from what you know, but you write into what you don't know. You are going to leave the world, right? So you really hate to leave it in worse shape than you found it. I have a certain degree of hopefulness, but I don't think it means anything unless we really continue to look at the earth the way poets do. I like this set because it's partly her very overt political stuff and partly about being a writer, and it demonstrates the way in Grace's life those two were never really separate. Never really separate, even in the early years when she was publishing stories. And like most writers in the United States, then and now, she was thinking, oh, I shouldn't have my politics in my art, you know. And of course, that bogus argument is still going on. But she got over it, as I hope all of us do. And so I think it's fair to say that once she figured that out, her politics infused her art. Her art was a delivery for the politics as well as the beauty and the philosophy. And funny, you know, Grace was so funny, even when she wasn't trying. She would say, I think I've written something just heart-wrenching. And then they laugh. What are they laughing at? And her friend Jane Cooper, who was also a poet, would say, I'm trying to be funny. I think I'm being light. And they're crying. Why are they crying? The two of them, they were very funny.
Here is Grace Paley reading one of her short stories.
I saw my ex-husband in the street. I was sitting on the steps of the new library. Hello, my life, I said. We had once been married for 27 years, so I felt justified. He said, what? What life? No life of mine. I said, okay. I don't argue when there's real disagreement. I got up and went into the library to see how much I owed them. The librarian said, $32 even, and you've owed it for 18 years. I didn't deny anything, because I don't understand how time passes. I have had those books. I have often thought of them. The library is only 2 blocks away. My ex-husband followed me to the book's return desk. He interrupted the librarian, who had more to tell. In many ways, he said, as I look back, I attribute the dissolution of our marriage to the fact that you never invited the Bertrams to dinner. That's possible, I said, but really, if you remember, first, my father was sick that Friday, then the children were born, then I had those Tuesday night meetings, then the war began, then we didn't seem to know them anymore. But you're right, I should have had them to dinner. I gave the librarian a check for $32. Immediately she trusted me, put my past behind her, wiped the record clean, which is just what most other municipal and or state bureaucracies will not do. I checked out the 2 Edith Wharton books I had just returned because I'd read them so long ago, and they are more apropos now than ever. They were The House of Mirth and The Children, which is about how life in the United States, in New York, changed in 27 years, 50 years ago. A nice thing I do remember is breakfast, my ex-husband said. I was surprised. All we ever had was coffee. Then I remembered there was a hole in the back of the kitchen closet which opened into the apartment next door. There, they always ate sugar-cured smoked bacon. It gave us a very grand feeling about breakfast, but we never got stuffed and sluggish. That was when we were poor, I said. When were we ever rich, he asked. Oh, as time went on, as our responsibilities increased, we didn't go in need. You took adequate financial care, I reminded him. The children went to camp 4 weeks a year and in decent ponchos with sleeping bags and boots, just like everyone else. They looked very nice. Our place was warm in winter and we had nice red pillows and things. I wanted a sailboat, he said, but you didn't want anything. Don't be bitter, I said. It's never too late. No, he said with a great deal of bitterness, I may get a sailboat. As a matter of fact, I have money down on an 18-foot split rigger. I'm doing well this year and can look forward to better, But as for you, it's too late. You'll always want nothing. He had had a habit throughout the 27 years of making a narrow remark, which, like a plumber's snake, could work its way through the ear, down the throat, halfway to my heart. He would then disappear, leaving me choking with equipment. What I mean is, I sat down on the library steps and he went away. I looked through the House of Mirth, but lost interest. I felt extremely accused. Now, it's true I'm short of requests and absolute requirements, but I do want something. I want, for instance, to be a different person. I want to be the woman who brings these two books back in 2 weeks. I want to be the effective citizen who changes the school system and addresses the Board of Estimate on the troubles of this dear urban center. I had promised my children to end the war before they grew up. I wanted to have been married forever to one person, my ex-husband or my present one. Either has enough character for a whole life, which, as it turns out, is really not such a long time. You couldn't exhaust either man's qualities or get under the rock of his reasons in one short life. Just this morning, I looked out the window to watch the street for a while and saw that the little sycamores the city had dreamily planted a couple of years before the kids were born had come that day to the prime of their lives. Well, I decided to bring those two books back to the library, which proves that when a person or an event comes along to jolt or appraise me, I can take some appropriate action, although I am better known for my hospitable remarks.
You are listening to a memorial celebration of Grace Paley, who would have turned 88 on December 11th. Again, here is Judith Arcana.
Grace came up, this young child of socialists. She was in the student unions of the 30s and the 40s, then the young military wife, then having the kids and so on. And she was active in her PTA, and she paid attention to what was going on in the park and among the other mothers, and she was living that life. But the way I think of it is, it's out of the PTA and into the streets. What happened was, in the PTA, in the park, out of her motherhood, again, right out of the reality of her daily life, she changed and became way more outspoken. So that, for instance, when New York City decided they were going to break up Washington Square Park and run buses through the middle of it and various other unseemly choices, she was one of the people that organized in the community and stood in front of the buses and said, "We don't want that. We want our park." And when the parents didn't like what was going on in the schools, went to PTA meetings and testified for mayor's committees. And once the Vietnam War began and people began to know about, you know, in the beginning, like with so many of our wars, with so many of our many wars, people don't know. But as soon as folks found out, that was yet another place where she was propelled by her consciousness into using herself more loudly. So even someone like Grace, who had politics from the jump, changed in that period, that cauldron of great upheaval, social and political, cultural upheaval in the middle, late middle period of the 20th century in the USA, and became more outspoken, more active, more and more and more so. So that what was going on in the literature was going on in the life, and there was this, I was going to say crossover, but that's not right. The waves were, the tide was going that way on all fronts.
Here's Grace Paley reading A Conversation with My Father.
My father is 86 years old and in bed. His heart, that bloody motor, is equally old and will not do certain jobs anymore. It still floods his head with brainy light, but it won't let his legs carry the weight of his body around the house. Despite my metaphors, this muscle failure is not due to his old heart, he says, but to a potassium shortage. Sitting on one pillow, leaning on three, He offers last-minute advice and makes a request. I would like you to write a simple story just once more, he says. The kind Maupassant wrote, or Chekhov, the kind you used to write. Just recognizable people and then write down what happened to them next. I say, yes, why not? That's possible. I want to please him, though I don't remember writing that way. I would like to tell such a story, if he means the kind that begins, there was a woman, followed by plot, the absolute line between two points, which I've always despised. Not for literary reasons alone, but because it takes all hope away. Everyone, real or invented, deserves the open destiny of life.
That was Grace Paley, and again, here is Judith Arcana.
I celebrate Grace Paley's birthday, as I and many others of us celebrate other notable birthdays, including my own, of course, because Grace was so useful in the world. She was, you could say, important. She was even famous in certain circles, but it was that she was useful. She was useful as a writer, a person who made art with words, and she was useful as an activist. Her work in the street, literally at sidewalk level, was a huge part of her life. Everything from creating language for leaflets to being arrested, both federally and locally, in New York, Vermont, etc., all of her locations, the two major locations of her life, New York State and Vermont. Her usefulness as a model, her usefulness as a teacher, her usefulness as an explainer, someone who could say, well, think about it this way. Look at this. When we talk about militarism, when we talk about militarism infusing our daily lives, this is what we mean, etc., etc. And she would then explain, and she would explain in a way that anybody, everybody could understand. And then, of course, she literally was a teacher, taught many, 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 many students over the years, and therefore useful in that regard as well. So there's the usefulness factor. Also, there's the charm factor. She was completely charming. Now, mind you, you know, you can say this about anybody and that someone will say, well, I didn't like her. But basically, most people in many languages, in many countries on this globe, were mad for Grace. And it was because she had a charm about her. She was literally charming. And the charm was rooted in her complete lack of self-importance, her complete lack of obscurant language. She talked like a normal human being. She acted like a normal human being. She cracked her gum. She winked at the audience. She laughed. And she thought about the things that really, really matter in our lives and then talked and wrote about those things and took actions to deal with those things in ways that will continue to be useful, though she is dead. She's not here anymore, but she did so much, lucky for us, that her stuff is still here. And so we can keep on using that usefulness that I'm talking about. We can keep on learning from Grace as a teacher. Though she's gone.
It is the responsibility of society to let the poet be a poet. It is the responsibility of the poet to be a woman. It is the responsibility of the poet to stand on street corners giving out poems and beautifully written leaflets, also leaflets you can hardly bear to look at because of the screaming rhetoric. It is the responsibility of the poet to be lazy, to hang out and prophesy. It is the responsibility of the poet not to pay war taxes. It is the responsibility of the poet to go in and out of ivory towers and two-room apartments on Avenue C and buckwheat fields and army camps. It is the responsibility of the male poet to be a woman. It is the responsibility of the female poet to be a woman. It is the poet's responsibility to speak truth to power, as the Quakers say. It is the poet's responsibility to learn the truth from the powerless. It is the responsibility of the poet to say many times, there is no freedom without justice, and this means economic justice and love justice. It is the responsibility of the poet to sing this in all the original and traditional tunes of singing and telling poems. It is the responsibility of the poet to listen to gossip and pass it on in the way storytellers decant the story of life. There is no freedom without fear and bravery. There is no freedom unless earth and air and water continue, and children also continue. It is the responsibility of the poet to be a woman, to keep an eye on this world and cry out like Cassandra, but be listened to this time.
When Grace died in August of 2007, at first all of us who knew her, cared about her and her work, were just, as one always is, in the face of death, surprised, sorry, unhappy for a long time. And then all over the country, people began to think about, well, let's celebrate Grace. Let's have memorial celebrations, you know, memorials where you don't just feel bad that the person is dead, but you think, remember when she said this? Wasn't this hilarious? Or remember when she explained this thing about Palestine and Israel and suddenly you understood it for the first time in a way you never had before? Wasn't that good? Things like that. And so together with a couple other Portland folk who knew Grace, I organized an event at a local independent bookstore and have done that three times now, in 2007, 2008, and 2009. This year, I decided not to do that. I wanted to do something different. I wanted to focus more on her action as an organizer and activist, what she did in addition to the writing that she did, sent out monster numbers of email messages and created printouts that folks can have in a variety of places around town and elsewhere in the country. And I'm hoping that there will be celebrations of Grace on her birthday. Anytime, really, but the birthday, you know, it's so great to hang it on a birthday. Then you can have cake, you can sing happy birthday to her, you can giggle a lot at the same time that you're talking about the important work and art that this woman did in her life. So I'm encouraging everybody who's listening to put the Grace Paley birthday, the annual Grace Paley party, December 11th, on your calendars. And think about Grace, read her work out loud to each other, go out in the street and do vigils and actions, all the things that Grace would get a big kick out of and think were really important and useful. Do those things on her birthday to celebrate her. Some can be in bookstores like we did at first, and maybe we'll do again. And if they are in bookstores, let them be in independent bookstores like Looking Glass and Broadway Books, where we've had these events here in Portland. Let them be in bookstores that have the feeling, the politics, the philosophy, the necessity of what Grace's work was about.
That was Judith Arcana. Grace Paley would have been 88 this year on her birthday, December 11th. Thanks to Jody Darby, Hannah Veerkamp, Trillium Shannon, and Judith Arcana. This show was edited and produced by Aaron Yankee and is already archived on the KBOO website, kboo.fm. Thanks for listening.